Welcome to the Deep Dive, the show that cuts through the noise of dense reports and complex data, pulling out the most important, surprising, and yes, even entertaining insights just for you. Today, we're plunging headfirst into a story that's not just about a pharmaceutical company, but about seismic shifts in global health and the unprecedented success of a single class of drugs. We're talking, of course, about Eli Lilly and Company, known on the stock market as LLY. So let's really dig into this deep dive into Eli Lilly. It's a truly fascinating story of a company that has strategically honed its focus, and in doing so, found itself right at the epicenter of some of the biggest health challenges globally. Our mission today is to unravel Eli Lilly's recent profound strategic transformation, analyze its current powerhouse market position, and really understand the driving forces behind its remarkable growth. Plus, you know, the complex risks and fascinating opportunities that lie ahead. Think of this as your shortcut to understanding a true pharmaceutical giant and the massive bet it has placed on the future of healthcare.
It really is compelling. What's truly compelling here is how a deliberate strategic pivot can lead to such extraordinary outcomes, but also create new dependencies and, well, unique challenges. We're going to examine not just what they've achieved in terms of market dominance and financial performance, but why it matters in the broader healthcare ecosystem and what that implies for future innovation. We've pulled from a comprehensive investment analysis framework, but dug through their latest financial reports, crunched detailed industry forecasts, and even synthesized crucial insights from clinical trial summaries to bring you the absolute core of what you need to know.
Okay, to begin, let's talk about what I consider the most dramatic chapter in Eli Lilly's recent history. Its grand transformation. For decades, Eli Lilly was what you might call a more traditional, diversified pharmaceutical firm, right? With a wide array of products touching many different areas of medicine.
Pretty standard for big pharma back then.
Exactly. But they've recently undergone this profound strategic transformation, effectively reshaping their core identity. They've shifted from being a generalist to becoming a highly focused innovator.
Yeah, it's a really significant shift.
Now, their intense focus is directed towards just a few key therapeutic areas. Cardiometabolic health, which is a big one, encompassing diabetes and obesity.
Huge.
Oncology, the study and treatment of cancer. Immunology, dealing with conditions where the immune system goes awry. And neuroscience, focused on disorders of the nervous system like Alzheimer's.
Right. Four key pillars.
This sharpened focus isn't just a casual adjustment to their portfolio. It's the culmination of extraordinary growth and a deliberate multi-year strategy to specialize. And what's particularly striking is that despite this sharpened focus and immense impact, they technically operate as a single business segment, handling everything from the initial discovery
all the way through
of new molecules in their complex development, all the way through global manufacturing and sale of human pharmaceutical products.
Right, vertically integrated, essentially.
The powerful takeaway here is that this isn't just a company that happened to grow or stumble upon success. It's a company that intentionally reshaped itself, making a conscious choice to specialize and target specific high-need areas where they believe they could establish true leadership.
Exactly. This strategic clarity, this deliberate honing of their efforts, is a significant part of why we're seeing their current almost unprecedented success. If you look at their revenue streams, they are now overwhelmingly dominated by new, recently launched medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And at the absolute center of their portfolio, their principal growth engine, is a molecule called tirzepatide.
Ah, the big one.
Yes. This is a fascinating drug because it's a dual GIP-GLP-1 receptor agonist.
Okay, break that down a bit. GIP and GLP-1.
So GIP and GLP-1 are natural gut hormones. They play crucial roles in regulating blood sugar and appetite by activating receptors for both of these. Well, tirzepatide helps the body produce more insulin when needed, reduces glucose production by the liver, and importantly, slows gastric emptying and reduces appetite.
Which leads to significant weight loss, right? That's the key part.
That's the key part for the obesity indication, absolutely. Tirzepatide is marketed as Mounjaro for type 2 diabetes, and perhaps even more famously, as Zepbound for chronic weight management.
Right. Those names are everywhere now.
They really are. This single franchise has strategically positioned Eli Lilly in a direct, intense, almost duopolistic rivalry with Novo Nordisk.
Ah, the other giant in this space.
Precisely. Novo, as many of you might know, markets its own GLP-1 agonist, semaglutide, which you'd recognize as Ozempic and Wegovy.
So it's Lilly versus Novo.
It really is. This isn't just typical pharmaceutical competition. It's a high-stakes fight for leadership in two of the largest and fastest-growing therapeutic markets globally. diabetes, and increasingly obesity. But while the incretins are their rocket ship, it's important to remember it's not all about GLP-1s.
Okay, good point. What else is driving revenue?
Well, beyond cardiometabolic health, Lilly still generates significant and growing revenue from other areas. For example, in oncology, their drug Verzenio is a CDK4 and 6 inhibitor.
Which means?
It means it works by blocking specific proteins, CDK4 and CDK6, that help cancer cells grow. So it effectively puts the brakes on tumor progression in certain types of breast cancer. It's a key product, a standard of care now.
Got it. And immunology?
In immunology, Taltz, an IL-17A antagonist, continues to be a significant contributor.
Okay.
An IL-17A antagonist targets a specific immune protein, IL-17A, that drives inflammation and autoimmune conditions like psoriasis. So it helps calm the overactive immune response.
So while GLP-1s dominate the headlines, these other areas provide important diversification.
They do. Important diversification and substantial revenue streams in their own right.
So it's clear these new medicines are the engine of Lilly's growth. But what's truly striking, and perhaps a point of future opportunity and even vulnerability, is where geographically this massive growth is most concentrated right now.
Mm-hmm. That's a key factor.
It's overwhelmingly happening in one place, the United States. In 2023, the U.S. market contributed approximately 64% of Eli Lilly's total revenue.
64%. Wow.
Yeah. The initial uptake and commercial success of Mounjaro and Zepbound have been almost entirely concentrated here, making the U.S. the primary, undeniable engine for their top-line expansion. However, looking ahead, there's immense opportunity elsewhere that's largely untapped.
Absolutely. International is the next frontier.
Key international markets like Europe, Japan, and China represent significant future growth opportunities, although these are contingent on navigating crucial regulatory approvals and, just as importantly, securing favorable reimbursement decisions in each country.
Which is never straightforward. Each market is different.
No, it's a complex patchwork. And here's where it gets truly compelling for you, the patient, or just anyone interested in how healthcare is evolving. Mm. Eli Lilly isn't just pushing pills through traditional pharmaceutical channels. They've launched Lilly Direct.
Yes, the direct-to-consumer platform.
Exactly, a digital pharmacy platform. This signals a very clear intent to engage directly with patients, potentially streamlining access to their medicines.
Cutting out some middlemen, maybe?
Potentially.
Yeah.
And, crucially, gathering valuable real-world data directly from users on how their medicines are being used and how effective they are in the day-to-day. A bold move that challenges traditional pharmaceutical distribution models.
It really is a bit disruptive.
So what's the practical takeaway here for you? It means a company is not just making drugs. It's rethinking how those drugs get to people and how they gather insights from the real world, aiming for a more direct, perhaps more efficient, and certainly more digitally integrated healthcare experience. #2, industry dynamics and Eli Lilly's competitive edge.
Given Eli Lilly's aggressive strategy, it's vital to connect this to the broader picture. The global pharmaceutical industry itself, it's navigating an intense period of disruption and opportunity right now, truly a shifting landscape defined by powerful, almost seismic secular trends.
Things are changing fast.
That are fundamentally redefining business models and competitive advantages across the board. Yes, very fast. One of the most significant macro trends we're seeing is the rapid integration of artificial intelligence, or AI, to accelerate drug discovery.
AI and drug discovery? Okay. How big a deal is that?
It's potentially enormous. Industry forecasts are pretty staggering. AI could contribute to as much as 30% of new drug discoveries by as early as 2025.
30%? That's soon.
That's the projection. Imagine that. This has the potential to fundamentally reduce preclinical development timelines and costs by up to 50%.
Wow.
It's a game changer for efficiency. But of course, this isn't a free lunch. This shift necessitates significant strategic investment in data science and advanced computational capabilities to simply maintain a competitive edge in R&D.
So you need the tech and the talent.
Absolutely. Companies that don't make these investments risk being left behind. Simultaneously, the industry faces persistent and intensifying pricing pressures from every direction. Governments and payers worldwide are scrutinizing drug costs more closely than ever before.
We hear about that all the time, drug prices.
Yes. In the U.S., the Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, has empowered Medicare to negotiate drug prices for the first time in its history for certain high-cost older drugs.
That was a big change, wasn't it?
a fundamental seismic shift in the U.S. pricing landscape, traditionally driven by market forces rather than direct government negotiation. And it's not just the U.S. European authorities are also exploring measures to reduce market exclusivity periods to control costs.
So pressure from all sides.
Pretty much. These initiatives collectively create a really challenging backdrop for long-term revenue forecasting and margin stability for all pharmaceutical companies, forcing them to innovate not just in science, but in business models. And then there's the perennial industry challenge, something every major pharma company dreads, the patent cliff.
Ah, when the patents run out.
Exactly. This refers to the period when blockbuster drugs lose their patent protection, opening the door for generic and biosimilar competition and often leading to massive, rapid revenue loss. Major pharmaceutical companies are bracing for an estimated $200 billion in revenue loss from patent expirations in the coming years.
$200 billion? That's astronomical.
It is. For example, Merck's top-selling oncology drug, Keytruda, is facing this cliff later this decade. This dynamic places a relentless emphasis on pipeline innovation, because companies are constantly in a race, a never-ending treadmill, to discover and launch new blockbusters to replace that lost revenue and sustain growth.
So you have to keep inventing the next big thing.
Constantly. So if we connect this to the bigger picture, these aren't just minor headwinds. They're fundamental forces reshaping how pharmaceutical companies operate and innovate on almost every level.
Amidst these powerful macro shifts and industry challenges, it becomes even more critical to understand where Eli Lilly focuses its competitive energy. And without a doubt, that's the GLP-1 market, where the real showdown, the high-stakes battle, is happening.
Absolutely. The GLP-1 space for diabetes and obesity is where Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk have established what can only be described as a formidable duopoly.
The two big players again.
Right. Lilly's tirzepatide, sold as Mounjaro and Zepbound, is in direct, intense competition with Novo Nordisk's semaglutide, known as Ozempic and Wegovy. What gives Eli Lilly a key competitive advantage here, especially for weight loss, is the clinical evidence.
They have better results.
For weight loss, yes. The head-to-head SURMOUNT-5 clinical trial demonstrated that Zepbound led to superior weight loss compared to Wegovy at maximum tolerated doses.
It's a huge differentiator, surely.
It is a huge differentiator for many patients and prescribers, offering a more powerful tool in the fight against obesity. However, it's worth noting that Novo Nordisk benefits from a significant first-mover advantage.
They were there first.
They were there first, having established a strong market presence with Ozempic and Wegovy years before Lilly's entries arrived. They captured that initial mindshare.
Makes sense.
But this race is far from over. Both companies are engaged in a high-stakes competition to innovate further, with robust pipelines featuring next-generation assets.
What kind of things are we talking about?
We're talking about exciting developments like oral formulations.
Pills instead of shots.
Exactly. Offering the convenience of a pill over an injection, such as Lilly's Orforglipron and Novo's Amycretin.
That could be a game changer for patients.
It really could. And beyond single molecule treatments, they're developing novel combination therapies, such as Novo's CagriSema, which combines semaglutide with another compound called cagrilintide, potentially offering even greater benefits. This is where the future of these treatments will likely be shaped, moving beyond daily or weekly injections towards more convenient and potentially more effective options.
So the innovation race continues.
Absolutely. Fiercely. Beyond this fierce duopoly, Eli Lilly does compete with other large-cap pharmaceutical peers like Pfizer, Merck, AbbVie, and Johnson & Johnson. These companies have diversified product portfolios, immense financial resources, and extensive R&D capabilities. They are formidable in their own right.
Right. It's not just Novo they have to worry about.
Not entirely, though. The GLP-1 space is the main battleground. But the high barriers to entry in the GLP-1 market were powerfully underscored by Pfizer's recent clinical trial setbacks with its oral GLP-1 candidate.
What happened there?
They faced significant safety and tolerability issues, which really highlights the scientific and developmental lead held by Lilly and Novo Nordisk in this specific, highly complex area. It's not as easy as it looks to develop these drugs.
So it's hard science, hard to replicate. It certainly sounds like a tough market to break into if you're not already one of the two big players.
Yeah.
So given all this, what exactly is Eli Lilly's competitive moat here? What are the key barriers to entry that protect them, allowing them to maintain their lead? Can you break that down into clearer terms for us?
Certainly. Eli Lilly's competitive moat, its durable advantages, are built on three main pillars that make it incredibly difficult for others to catch up.
Okay, pillar number one.
First, there's intellectual property. They have a robust patent estate that shields their key products from generic competition for many years.
The patents.
Crucial.
Absolutely crucial. For tirzepatide, the core compound patent extends to 2036 in the U.S. and 2037 in Europe.
Wow, that's a long time. That provides an incredibly long runway of market exclusivity, ensuring they can reap the benefits of their innovation for a significant period, a truly fundamental pillar in this industry.
Okay, go to.
Second is their R&D prowess. This is their proven, repeatable ability to innovate and execute complex clinical development programs successfully. The very existence and success of tirzepatide itself is the clearest demonstration of this. Developing a dual GIP-GLP-1 agonist with superior efficacy and navigating it through rigorous clinical trials and regulatory approval is a monumental scientific barrier.
Something few can do.
That very few companies in the world can overcome. It speaks to deep scientific expertise, a high-performing research engine, and a culture of pushing scientific boundaries.
Right. And the third pillar, you mentioned manufacturing earlier.
Exactly. Perhaps the most compelling differentiator and one that became incredibly clear with the initial launches is manufacturing scale. When GLP-1 therapies first hit the market, there were widespread supply shortages due to the immense unexpected demand.
I remember that. Hard to get.
Very hard to get. This quickly revealed that manufacturing capacity was the primary constraint on growth, not just for Lilly, but for the entire burgeoning market. In response, Eli Lilly has embarked on an aggressive, truly historic capital investment cycle. They've committed over $50 billion since 2020 to expand their manufacturing footprint, primarily here in the U.S.
$50 billion.
That is factors.
$50 billion. It's staggering. This isn't just an operational necessity to meet demand. It's a strategic maneuver. By building out this vast, complex, and highly specialized supply chain for injectable biologics, which are much harder to produce at scale than a simple pill, they are raising the barrier to entry for smaller competitors to almost insurmountable levels.
So even if someone invents a competing drug? Exactly. These smaller players might develop clinically successful drugs, but they will simply lack the immense, costly, and time-consuming manufacturing infrastructure to compete on scale for many, many years. This raises an important question. Can smaller players with clinically successful drugs truly compete if they lack the immense infrastructure needed for manufacturing at scale? Lilly's investments suggest the answer is no, at least not for a very long time. #3, financial performance and growth story. Turning now to their financials, an analysis of Eli Lilly's results over the past 5 years reveals a company at a clear, dramatic inflection point.
The numbers must be pretty impressive.
They really are. We're seeing an unparalleled acceleration in revenue growth and profitability, which is directly driven by their new product portfolio. This growth has also been accompanied by a strategic, significant increase in capital investment to support their future expansion and dominance.
Okay, give us the headline numbers. Revenue growth.
Their revenue grew at a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, of 16.4% from $24.5 billion in 2020 to an estimated $45.0 billion in 2024.
Wow, nearly doubled in 4 years.
Pretty much. And this isn't just steady growth. The acceleration was particularly pronounced in 2023 and 2024, with year-over-year increases of 20% and a stunning 32% respectively.
32% growth in a year for a company that size.
Incredible.
It is. To give you some context, if you were looking at their financial summary, you'd see their operating income more than doubled, leaping from $6.5 billion in 2021 to an estimated $12.7 billion in 2024. Their EBITDA, which stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, a key measure of a company's core operating profitability, also saw impressive growth from $9.7 billion to $16.6 billion over the same period.
So profitability is soaring too.
Absolutely. They've consistently maintained really high gross margins, sitting at an impressive 82.2% in Q4 2024, which reflects the premium pricing and immense value of their innovative medicines.
82% gross margin. That's huge. Very healthy. Now, while cash flow from operations remained robust, hitting $8.8 billion in 2024, their free cash flow, which is the cash a company generates after accounting for cash outflows to support operations and maintain its capital assets, has actually been constrained.
Oh, why is that? If revenue and profits are up.
It's because of that deliberate massive ramp up in capital expenditures, or CapEx.
The manufacturing investment.
Exactly. The money spent on acquiring or upgrading physical assets like manufacturing plants. Their CapEx surged from $1.8 billion in 2021 to an estimated $5.1 billion in 2024.
So they're pouring money back into building capacity.
Pouring it back in. This directly reflects their bold strategy to build out manufacturing capacity at an unprecedented pace. This strategic choice has resulted in lower near-term free cash flow conversion in 2023, for instance. Their free cash flow was actually negative by over $500 million.
Negative free cash flow, even with all that revenue?
Yes, because the CapEx spend was so high. But it's a strategic trade-off they're making knowingly to secure what they believe will be even greater long-term growth and market leadership. It's a very intentional long-term investment.
Here's where it truly becomes clear. This company has effectively placed a massive, audacious bet on one core area, and it's paying off in spades.
Mm-hmm. It's all about focus.
But that also creates this really strong, almost unprecedented dependency. The sources of Eli Lilly's growth are highly concentrated.
Very much so.
The diabetes and obesity therapeutic area has become the overwhelming contributor to the company's revenue. It grew from 52% of total sales in 2020 to approximately 69% in 2024.
Wow, nearly 70% from one area.
Yeah, that just starkly highlights their increasing dependency on this single, albeit immensely powerful, franchise. In stark contrast, while their oncology and immunology segments have delivered steady, respectable growth, it's been far more modest compared to the cardiometabolic surge.
Steady, but not the same explosive growth.
Exactly. Geographically, as we touched on earlier, the U.S. market has been the undisputed engine of this expansion. U.S. revenue more than doubled, going from $14.2 billion in 2020 to an estimated $28.8 billion in 2024. Just imagine seeing those numbers side by side in their financial breakdown. It's a dramatic visual of growth concentration.
It really highlights the U.S. focus so far.
Meanwhile, international revenue grew at a slower pace, which actually underscores the immense magnitude of opportunity that still remains as the company pursues broader global reimbursement and market access for Mounjaro and Zepbound.
It's a vast gold mine waiting to be tapped.
But one that will require careful navigation of diverse regulatory and reimbursement landscapes.
Always the challenge internationally.
And it's important to note that despite these huge manufacturing investments, their commitment to pure innovation remains substantial. Their R&D expenses have consistently represented over 20% of their total revenue.
Which is a huge percentage.
Climbing from $6.1 billion in 2020 to over $9.3 billion in 2023.
Almost $10 billion a year on R&D.
The high productivity of this enormous investment is clearly evidenced by the string of successful blockbuster product launches in recent years, which have, in turn, fueled this incredible growth trajectory. It's a virtuous cycle. Mm-hmm. Invest heavily, innovate successfully, drive revenue, reinvest.
That's the model they're banking on. #IVE, product portfolio and future pipeline.
So let's transition now to Eli Lilly's product portfolio and what's coming down the pipeline. Their value proposition is truly anchored by a portfolio of high-growth products, and at the very top of that list, unsurprisingly, is the tirzepatide franchise.
Star of the show.
We're talking about Mounjaro and Zepbound, which are single-handedly redefining their financial profile. This dual GIP-GLP-1 agonist is, without a doubt, the company's most valuable asset and the primary driver of its recent meteoric performance. For the full year 2024, Mounjaro, approved for type 2 diabetes, generated an astounding $11.5 billion in sales.
$11.5 billion just for Mounjaro.
And Zepbound, approved for chronic weight management, achieved a remarkable $4.9 billion in sales in its very first full year on the market.
Nearly $5 billion in year one. That's huge.
That brings the total tirzepatide franchise revenue to approximately $16.4 billion.
$16 billion from one molecule family. Incredible.
The strength here is its strong clinical profile. It's demonstrated superior weight loss efficacy compared to competitor semaglutide in head-to-head studies, providing a robust foundation for continued market share gains and solidifying its position as a leading treatment for these widespread conditions.
That clinical edge is key.
But despite the focus on incretins, they're certainly not a one-trick pony. Eli Lilly has other blockbuster drugs in its arsenal that play crucial roles in their diversified strategy.
Right, like Verzenio.
Verzenio, exactly. An oral CDK4 and 6 inhibitor in oncology. It's a cornerstone of their cancer portfolio, yeah. And it's become a standard of care in certain types of breast cancer. It's still growing strong, with 2024 sales reaching $5.3 billion, a 37% increase over the prior year.
It's still growing fast. Shows their strength in oncology isn't waning.
Right. This shows Lilly's deep commitment and success in the oncology space. Then there's Jardiance, co-marketed with Boehringer Ingelheim.
Another big diabetes drug, but also for heart failure now.
Exactly. A leading treatment for type 2 diabetes that has also significantly expanded its indications to include heart failure, highlighting its broader cardiovascular benefits.
Mm-hmm. Important label expansions.
And in immunology, Taltz, for autoimmune conditions like psoriasis, remains a significant contributor.
Still bringing in solid revenue.
Interestingly, some of their legacy products, like Trulicity, once a top-selling GLP-1 for diabetes, are now seeing sales declines.
As people switch over.
As patients and physicians transition to the more effective and potent Mounjaro. It's a classic case of internal product cannibalization, but it's a healthy sign when a company's new innovations outperform and replace its older successful products.
You'd rather cannibalize yourself than have a competitor do it. And this naturally leads us directly into a critical component of any pharmaceutical company's long-term outlook. Its ability to protect its innovations through robust intellectual property.
The patents again.
And just as importantly, continually replenish its portfolio through groundbreaking R&D. Lilly is actually quite well positioned regarding its key growth drivers, thanks to those strong patents. While some older products face nearer-term expirations, the tirzepatide franchise has an incredibly long period of market exclusivity. This extended runway is a fundamental pillar of the company's long-term growth narrative, providing stability and predictability for well over a decade.
Okay, so how long are we talking? Remind us of those key dates.
Sure. To give you a clearer picture, let's consider some key patent expiration dates. Mounjaro and Zepbound's core compound patent, which is the fundamental protection for the molecule itself, extends to 2036 in the U.S. and 2037 in Europe.
2036 and 2037.
Okay.
That is a long time.
It's a solid decade plus from now, offering a substantial window for maximizing revenue. Verzenio, their oncology cornerstone, is protected until 2031 in the U.S. and 2033 in Europe.
Still pretty good.
Decent runway. Trulicity, which we just mentioned is seeing declines due to Mounjaro, is a nearer-term expiration coming up in 2027 in the U.S. and 2029 in Europe.
Okay, that's coming up relatively soon.
Relatively soon, yes. Jardiance, another important one, has protection until 2029 in both regions, and Taltz extends to 2030 in the U.S. and 2031 in Europe.
So it's a mix, but the biggest driver is protected for a long time.
Exactly. This staggered expiration schedule illustrates the delicate balancing act Eli Lilly faces. Managing expiring patents for older drugs while new, powerful products gain momentum and new pipeline assets mature. It's a continuous relay race where one product hands off the baton to the next.
That's a great way to put it, a continuous relay race. And it's not just about defending what they have, it's crucially about what's next.
Right.
Eli Lilly's clinical pipeline is robust, deep, and impressively diverse.
Very important for the long term.
With numerous late-stage assets that have the potential to become significant new products and further diversify their revenue base beyond the incretins, this is where their continued R&D prowess really shines.
Absolutely. If we look at their select late-stage clinical pipeline assets, you'll see how strategically important each of these is for their future growth.
Okay, walk us through some highlights. What's exciting in the pipeline?
Well, for obesity and diabetes, Orforglipron is a critical next-generation asset. It's an oral GLP-1 receptor agonist.
The pill form again.
The pill form, which means it's taken as a pill rather than an injection. This is designed to compete in the emerging oral anti-obesity market, a space where patient preference for convenience will be paramount. A regulatory submission is expected in 2025, which could be a huge step.
Big potential there. What else?
Then there's Retatrutide, which is a GIP-GLP-1 glucagon GGG triagonist.
Triple G. What does that mean?
Think of this as a supercharged version of the already powerful GLP-1s. It targets three different metabolic pathways, offering the potential for even greater weight loss efficacy than tirzepatide.
Even better than Mounjaro Zepbound.
Potentially. This could serve as a successor product, potentially extending the incretin franchise lifecycle even further. Phase 3 data disclosure is expected in 2025 for that one, which will be eagerly watched.
Wow. Okay, what about outside of diabetes obesity?
In neuroscience, donanemab, also known as remternetug for Alzheimer's, is a classic high-risk, high-reward bet.
Alzheimer's. The holy grail.
Indeed. It's an amyloid plaque-clearing antibody. Amyloid plaques are abnormal protein clumps in the brain, widely believed to be a key driver of Alzheimer's disease. This drug aims to clear them out, potentially slowing disease progression.
Huge if it works.
Huge if it works. If successful, this could open a vast, currently underserved market, but the scientific challenges are immense. Regulatory action in the EU is expected in 2025.
Fingers crossed on that one. Oncology.
In oncology, they're expanding beyond Verzenio with pirtobrutinib, or Jaypirca, a non-covalent BTK inhibitor, with a regulatory submission for first-line chronic lymphocytic leukemia, CLL, expected in 2025. This shows their continued push into new cancer treatments. And imlunestrant, an oral ESRD, which stands for Selective Estrogen Receptor Degrader, aims to treat metastatic breast cancer, MBC, and has regulatory action expected in 2025.
And immunology.
Finally, in immunology, mirikizumab, or OMVO, an IL-23p19 antibody, which targets a specific inflammatory pathway, has regulatory action for Crohn's disease, also expected in 2025.
So a lot happening across different areas.
A very busy pipeline. It's clearly strategically designed. It builds upon existing strengths, like the incretin franchise, while simultaneously venturing into new high-potential areas, pushing the boundaries of what's medically possible. And their early-stage pipeline includes even more novel modalities, such as genetic medicines and radiopharmaceuticals developed through both internal R&D and targeted business development.
Radiopharmaceuticals, like targeted radiation.
Exactly. Using radioactive molecules to target and kill cancer cells specifically. This raises an important question. How much of Lilly's current premium valuation is already banking on the successful commercialization of these pipeline assets, especially those in high-risk, high-reward areas like Alzheimer's?
Yeah. How much hope is priced in?
Precisely. It's a testament to their R&D prowess, but also a significant source of future uncertainty that investors are closely watching. #V, recent developments and strategic moves, 2023-2025.
Now, let's talk about the very recent past, specifically from 2023 through early 2025. This period has been one of the most transformative in Eli Lilly's history, absolutely marked by blockbuster product launches, unprecedented investments in manufacturing, and a flurry of strategic acquisitions to fortify its future pipeline.
It's been nonstop activity.
It really has. It's been a whirlwind. The commercial trajectory of the tirzepatide franchise has been the dominant development here. Zepbound, their drug for chronic weight management, was launched in U.S. pharmacies in December 2023, right after its FDA approval in November.
And it took off like a rocket.
The launch has been nothing short of exceptionally strong, with Q4 2024 sales reaching an incredible $1.9 billion in just its first full quarter.
Almost $2 billion in one quarter for a new launch. Astounding.
To manage this immense demand and improve patient access, Lilly has introduced several initiatives, including the launch of their Lilly Direct digital pharmacy platform, which we discussed.
The direct channel.
And the release of single-dose vials, which offer a lower-priced option for self-pay patients, helping to expand affordability.
Trying to address access issues.
Exactly. And in late 2024, Zepbound received an expanded FDA approval for the treatment of moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA, in adults with obesity.
Oh, that's a big expansion. Sleep apnea is very common.
Hugely common. This dramatically broadens its market potential beyond just weight loss, opening up a new, significant patient population. And to address the persistent supply constraints that have inevitably accompanied this massive, almost insatiable demand, Eli Lilly has initiated a truly historic expansion of its manufacturing capabilities.
The $50 billion question.
Right. Since 2020, the company has committed over $50 billion to enhance its U.S. manufacturing footprint. Just think about that for a moment. $50 billion committed to manufacturing. That's not just an investment. It's a statement of intent, a strategic declaration of long-term dominance that few companies in any sector can match.
It's really betting the farm on being able to supply the world.
Pretty much. This includes the construction of 4 new manufacturing sites announced just in February 2025 and the acquisition of an injectable medicine facility in Wisconsin from Nexus Pharmaceuticals in April 2024.
Buying and building aggressively.
This aggressive build-out is a crucial point. It's the core component of the company's long-term strategy to secure its supply chain, reduce reliance on external partners, and solidify its market leadership, especially in complex injectable medicines. It's not just about making enough. It's about strategically dominating the supply and distribution to ensure their products reach every patient who needs them.
Control the supply, control the market, essentially. Beyond the sheer operational build-out, Eli Lilly has also been incredibly active in what we can call a buy-and-build approach when it comes to strategic acquisitions and partnerships.
So not just building factories, but buying companies too.
Exactly. This is where they actively pursue business development to complement their internal R&D efforts and, crucially, to enter entirely new therapeutic modalities, exploring uncharted scientific territory. A prime example is their strategic entry into radiopharmaceuticals.
We mentioned that briefly. Tell us more.
In late 2023, Eli Lilly acquired Point Biopharma for approximately $1.4 billion. What's truly fascinating here is how they're not just buying companies with a single drug that's close to market, they're buying entire capabilities and platforms.
Oh, buying the technology, not just the product.
Precisely. This was not an acquisition of a single late-stage product, but rather the purchase of a platform and the scientific expertise needed to build a brand new therapeutic capability, a new pillar for growth using radioactive isotopes to target and destroy cancer cells. This initial acquisition was followed by further collaborations with companies like Actis Oncology and Advanced Cell in 2024 and 2025 to deepen their presence in the radiopharma space. They're constructing an entirely new pillar of growth, building out a novel therapeutic area from the ground up.
That's a very long-term strategic move.
Very much so. Other notable transactions include the 2025 acquisition of Scorpion Therapeutics' PI3 Coli inhibitor program to bolster their oncology pipeline, and a series of partnerships to access novel antibody discovery platforms, such as the collaboration with Alchemab for ALS treatments. This pattern of acquiring platform capabilities rather than just late-stage drugs is a more capital-efficient method of pipeline expansion. It also serves as a strategic hedge against future competitive threats, even in their core metabolic franchise.
So diversifying the science itself.
Exactly. They're thinking years, even decades ahead, diversifying their scientific toolkit to ensure long-term relevance and leadership across multiple therapeutic fronts. #TagTag6. Growth opportunities and strategic initiatives.
Let's talk about the future now and the truly massive growth opportunities Eli Lilly is poised to seize. The most significant near to medium term growth opportunity lies squarely, undeniably, in the global obesity market. This is the big one.
Absolutely massive potential.
So let's unpack this. Analysts project this market to expand dramatically, with estimates for annual sales ranging from $60 billion to as high as $150 billion by the early 2030s.
$150 billion for obesity treatments.
It's an astronomical figure for a single therapeutic area. And with Zepbound clinically demonstrated efficacy advantage showing superior weight loss compared to its main competitor, Eli Lilly is exceptionally well positioned to capture a substantial share of this burgeoning market.
Their clinical data gives them a strong starting position.
Right. The recent label expansion into obstructive sleep apnea, which is a common and serious condition often linked to obesity, further solidifies Zepbound's value proposition to patients and payers alike, broadening its reach and medical necessity.
Adding OSA makes it even more compelling medically.
That's a powerful combination that could drive immense sustained revenue for years to come, making it a true market-defining product.
Beyond the immediate obesity market itself, Eli Lilly's growth strategy is deeply rooted in expanding its reach, both geographically and through its robust pipeline.
Right, the international push and the next wave of drugs.
Exactly. While the United States has been the primary source of revenue for Mounjaro and Zepbound to date, international markets represent a vast and largely untapped opportunity. Securing reimbursement and broad market access in Europe, China, Japan, and other key regions will be a critical driver of growth over the next 5 to 10 years.
But it's tough, right? Getting approval and payment everywhere.
Each of these markets presents unique regulatory, pricing, and cultural challenges, but the patient need is universal. And as we discussed, the company's massive manufacturing expansion is an absolute prerequisite for this global rollout.
Gotta make enough product first.
Ensuring they can actually meet worldwide demand when approvals and reimbursement come through. The pipeline advancement is also key for subsequent waves of growth, ensuring that when current blockbusters eventually face patent expiration, new innovations are ready to step in.
The relay race continues.
Precisely. The development of an effective oral GLP-1, or orforglipron, is crucial for competing with rivals' oral formulations and capturing patient preference for the sheer convenience of pills over injections.
Convenience is king sometimes.
Often it is. And retatrutide, that GGG triagonist, has shown the potential for even greater efficacy in early trials and could serve as a powerful successor to tirzepatide, further extending the incretin franchise's life cycle and solidifying Lilly's leadership in cardiometabolic health.
Keeping that leadership position going.
And importantly, Eli Lilly is making substantial long-term investments in areas outside of cardiometabolic health, actively diversifying for the future.
Like oncology and neuroscience.
Right. Their strategic push into oncology, particularly through the acquisition of the Point Biopharma radioligand platform, represents a significant effort to build a new growth pillar beyond their incretin franchise. This isn't just about one drug. It's about establishing an entirely new therapeutic capability within cancer treatment. Similarly, the high-risk, high-reward programs in neuroscience for Alzheimer's disease, if successful, could unlock a market of immense, almost unimaginable scale.
Changing everything if it works.
Addressing one of the most devastating unmet medical needs globally and significantly diversifying the company's revenue base.
And finally, a really interesting strategic initiative that ties into modern consumer trends is their aggressive push into digital health and direct-to-consumer engagement. The launch of Lilly Direct.
Mm-hmm. Moving closer to the patient.
It's a forward-looking initiative that strategically moves the company closer to you, the end patient. So what's the upshot of all this for you, the person interacting with the healthcare system? This platform has the potential to dramatically improve patient access and adherence to their medications, especially for chronic conditions where consistent treatment is key.
Making it easier to get and stay on the meds.
Right. It can also help build brand loyalty by creating a more direct relationship with the company. Perhaps most importantly for the company, it can provide invaluable real-world data on treatment patterns and outcomes, feeding back into their R&D and commercial strategies.
Data is gold.
Absolutely. Over time, this direct channel could also offer margin benefits by reducing reliance on intermediaries in the traditional supply chain, allowing Lilly to capture more of the value.
Cutting out layers could boost profits.
It means they're not just selling pills. They're trying to build a direct, ongoing relationship with you, the patient, which could be a true game changer for the pharmaceutical industry and for how healthcare is delivered in the future.
A fundamental shift in the model, potentially. Hashtag tag 7, capital allocation and shareholder returns. Eli Lilly's capital allocation strategy provides a really clear window into their priorities and convictions. Their approach unequivocally prioritizes reinvestment to fund those significant growth opportunities we've just discussed.
Pouring money back into the business.
While simultaneously demonstrating a strong, consistent commitment to returning capital to shareholders through dividends and share repurchases.
Okay, so what comes first? Growth or shareholder returns?
Their stated priorities for how they deploy their capital are, in order, first, supporting new product launches like the explosive Zepbound. Second, aggressively expanding manufacturing capacity, as evidenced by that truly staggering $50 billion commitment we mentioned earlier.
The big build-out.
And third, advancing their pipeline through both robust internal R&D and targeted external M&A, like those radiopharma acquisitions.
So growth first, second, and third, basically.
Essentially, yes. This growth-oriented framework is very evident in their financial decisions, particularly the substantial and sustained increases in capital expenditures and R&D spending in recent years. It's a strategic choice to invest for long-term dominance, literally building the infrastructure for their future.
That's a strong statement of intent. And despite these immense reinvestment needs, the company has maintained and even aggressively enhanced its shareholder return programs.
Which is interesting given the huge spending.
Signaling a very high degree of confidence in its future cash flow generation. They have a long and incredibly consistent history of paying dividends. In December 2024, they announced a 15% increase in their quarterly dividend for 2025.
15% raise? That's substantial.
It is. This marks the seventh consecutive year with a 15% raise.
Wow. 7 years in a row.
Their annual dividend per share has grown steadily from $2.96 in 2020 to $5.20 in 2024. And their current dividend payout ratio of approximately 36%, meaning they're paying out about 36 cents of every dollar they earn as dividends, is quite sustainable.
Leaving plenty for reinvestment.
Providing ample capacity for future increases while still balancing those huge internal investment needs. On top of that, the company has also become more aggressive with its share buyback activity.
Buying back stock, too.
Yeah. After completing a $5 billion repurchase program in the fourth quarter of 2024, the board immediately authorized a new, significantly larger $15 billion program, which management expects to execute over the subsequent 3 years.
$15 billion in buybacks. That's a lot of confidence.
Just in Q4 2024 alone, the company returned approximately $2 billion to shareholders via buybacks.
$2 billion in one quarter.
If we connect this to the bigger picture,
The decision to substantially increase both the dividend and the share repurchase authorization, concurrent with a capital expansion plan exceeding $50 billion, is a powerful signal of management's conviction.
They must really believe the cash is going to flow.
It suggests management believes future operating cash flows from the Cretan franchise will be more than sufficient to fund all strategic priorities, capital expenditures, R&D, M&A, while still providing robust returns to shareholders.
It's a huge bet on future performance.
This sets an incredibly high bar for future performance and certainly underscores the company's optimistic, long-term financial outlook. This begs the question, can they truly deliver on such monumental expectations? Or is it a sign of exceptional confidence in an uncertain future?
That's the multi-billion dollar question right there. Hashtag tag 8, risk assessment and potential headwinds.
While Eli Lilly's growth prospects are substantial and exciting, it's crucial to look at the flip side, the significant risks that could impact its operations, financial results, and market position.
Gotta look at the downsides, too.
These risks span competitive, regulatory, clinical, and operational domains. So what's the practical takeaway here? While their intense focus has been a huge success, it's also put a lot of eggs in one very powerful but ultimately single basket.
The concentration risk.
Exactly. A significant portion of their current revenue and the vast majority of their projected growth are dependent on a single molecule. Tirzepatide, sold as Mounjaro and Zepbound.
Nearly 70% of revenue, as we said.
This level of concentration exposes the company to an outsized risk in the event of unforeseen long-term safety issues, a decline in market uptake due to changing trends, or the emergence of a clinically superior competitor.
If something goes wrong with tirzepatide, it's a huge problem.
Huge. The primary competitive threat, as we discussed, comes from Novo Nordisk, which is developing its own next-generation obesity treatments, such as CagriSema and oral amycretin, that could directly challenge tirzepatide's current efficacy advantage or offer even greater convenience.
The innovation race means the lead isn't guaranteed.
It's a two-horse race, and the stakes couldn't be higher.
Beyond that product concentration, external pressures from regulatory bodies and political landscapes pose significant and persistent challenges. The pharmaceutical industry is subject to intense scrutiny over drug pricing globally.
The pricing pressure again.
Yes. In the U.S., the Inflation Reduction Act will eventually subject top-selling drugs to price negotiations with Medicare, which could impact the long-term profitability of Lilly's key products once they become eligible.
So the government could force lower prices?
For Medicare, yes. This is a fundamental shift in how pharmaceutical companies interact with the largest payer in the U.S. economy. Similar pricing pressures exist in major international markets, where governments are constantly seeking ways to control healthcare costs, which could erode margins.
Pressure everywhere to keep costs down.
Everywhere. Furthermore, regulatory bodies could impose stricter requirements for clinical trials or marketing, potentially delaying or limiting product reach. And there's a rising serious threat from inadequately regulated counterfeit or illegally compounded versions of incretin medicines.
Fake Ozempic and things like that.
Exactly. Which not only pose a direct risk to patient safety, but also to the company's reputation and legitimate sales as they undermine trust and divert demand.
That's a scary risk.
Yeah.
And then there are the internal vulnerabilities related to their pipeline and massive operational undertakings. Their future growth narrative is heavily predicated on the successful development and commercialization of those promising pipeline assets we talked about.
Banking on the pipeline delivering.
But pharmaceutical R&D is inherently, notoriously uncertain. There's simply no guarantee of success, even for a company with Lilly's track record.
Science is hard. Lots of failures along the way.
The failure of a key late-stage asset, such as the oral GLP-1 candidate orforglipron, or the high-risk Alzheimer's program donanemab, would represent a significant setback and could negatively impact investor sentiment in the company's long-term growth profile, potentially shifting the narrative around their future.
A big trial failure would hurt badly.
And let's not forget the immense undertaking of their manufacturing expansion. The execution of this unprecedented ramp-up carries substantial operational risk.
Building all those factories isn't easy.
Not at all. The company must manage the construction and validation of multiple new facilities on time and on budget, ensuring meticulous quality control and strict regulatory compliance at every step.
So much can go wrong operationally.
Any delays, unexpected quality control issues, or regulatory problems at its manufacturing sites could severely disrupt product supply, preventing the company from meeting demand and potentially ceding market share to competitors who can supply.
If you can't make it, you can't sell it.
Past regulatory scrutiny at facilities, such as the Branchburg, New Jersey plant, highlights the persistent and rigorous nature of these challenges. Quality control is paramount and under constant watchful eyes.
What's truly fascinating here is that even with all their success, the sheer scale of their ambitions creates immense operational challenges that extend far beyond scientific discovery. It's no longer just about brilliant research. It's about flawless execution on a massive industrial scale, day in and day out.
It's an industrial challenge now, almost as much as a scientific one.
Precisely. And to broaden the scope of risks, we must consider legal and macroeconomic factors. While the core patents for tirzepatide are long dated, they will inevitably face legal challenges from generic and biosimilar manufacturers attempting to chip away at that exclusivity.
The patent lawsuits.
Always have. Always. An adverse ruling in a patent litigation case, even a small one, could shorten the period of market exclusivity and significantly impact future revenues. Also, older blockbusters like Trulicity, which loses exclusivity in 2027, will create revenue gaps that must be filled rapidly by new products.
That 2027 cliff for Trulicity is getting closer.
It is. Finally, as a global entity, Eli Lilly is exposed to a variety of external risks, including unfavorable foreign currency exchange rate movements, global economic downturns that could constrain healthcare budgets and patient access, and geopolitical tensions, particularly concerning trade relations and supply chain dependencies with regions like China. It's a complex web of interconnected risks.
Lots to worry about, even for a successful company. So after all this discussion about their incredible success, the bold strategy, and the inherent risks, let's talk about the price of that success. Eli Lilly's valuation. Their stock trades at a substantial, undeniable valuation premium compared to nearly all other large-cap pharmaceutical peers.
The market loves Lilly right now.
It really does. This isn't just a slight bump. It truly reflects the market's exceptionally high expectations for sustained, rapid growth driven by their leadership position in the obesity and diabetes markets. To give you some numbers that illustrate this premium, as of mid-2025, their trailing 12-month, or TTM, price-to-earnings PE ratio, stood at approximately 46x.
46 times earnings, that's steep.
It is. To put that in simple terms, investors are currently willing to pay $46 for every $1 of earnings. Lilly generates a figure dramatically higher than peers like Merck or Pfizer, worth closer to 13 per dollar of earnings, signaling immense growth expectations.
A huge premium compared to peers.
Their TTM enterprise value to EBITDA multiple, was around 33x, while most major pharmaceutical companies trade in a range of 7x to 15x. And their TTM price-to-sales PS ratio of about 12x also significantly exceeds the typical industry range of 3x to 5x.
Basically, on any metric, they look expensive relative to the industry.
Exactly. If you were to look at a peer group comparison, you'd see this stark contrast immediately. This substantial premium valuation is shared, to a degree, only by their primary competitor, Novo Nordisk.
The other GLP-1 giant.
Which indicates a unique scarcity value assigned to companies with dominant and protected franchises in the high-growth GLP-1 market. They are in a league of their own in this specific area.
This brings us to a crucial point about interpretation and the investment landscape. Eli Lilly's current valuation multiples are not only elevated relative to their peers, but also reside at the very higher end of their own 5- and 10-year historical ranges.
So expensive even compared to their own history.
Yes. For instance, their EBITDA multiple expanded from 21.7x at the end of 2020 to a peak of 47.9x at the end of 2023, directly tracking the escalating success and market expectations for Mounjaro and Zepbound. So the valuation ramped up massively alongside the drug success. Precisely. This means the market is unequivocally pricing in a best-case scenario for Eli Lilly. This includes a host of ambitious assumptions, sustained multi-year double-digit revenue growth, dominant market share capture in the global obesity market.
Assuming they win big globally.
Maintenance of high gross and operating margins despite increasing pricing pressures from governments and payers, successful execution of their massive manufacturing scale-up without significant delays or disruption.
Assuming the build-out goes perfectly.
And even meaningful positive contributions from their late-stage clinical pipeline, potentially including success in challenging areas like Alzheimer's disease.
So basically assuming everything goes right.
Pretty much. This optimistic outlook leaves very little margin for error. Any significant deviation from this trajectory, whether from a competitive setback, a clinical trial failure, a manufacturing delay, or a more severe than expected regulatory pricing action, could lead to a substantial re-rating of the company's valuation multiples.
If anything goes wrong, the stock could take a big hit.
Potentially, yes. This begs the question, When a company stock trades at such a premium, how much room is there for anything less than perfection? The market is betting incredibly heavily on their continued exceptional performance. Hashtag tag X. Key questions for further investigation and provocative thought.
As we wrap up this deep dive, it's important to acknowledge that despite all the analysis and impressive data, there are always unknowns, powerful future questions that will shape Eli Lilly's trajectory. So let's unpack some critical questions for further investigation, things to keep a very close eye on moving forward.
Good idea. What should people be watching?
First, how durable is Eli Lilly's competitive advantage in diabetes and obesity? While tirzepatide currently holds an efficacy lead, its long-term sustainability is paramount. We need to closely monitor Novo Nordisk's pipeline, particularly the clinical data for next-generation compounds like CagriSema and oral amycretin, to assess those long-term competitive dynamics.
Will Lilly stay ahead?
Right. And critically, can Lilly truly out-execute its rivals on manufacturing, which seems to be the ultimate differentiator for market dominance? Second, what is the realistic peak sales potential for tirzepatide across all indications? While market size estimates are vast, the actual realized revenue will depend heavily on factors like patient adherence rates over long periods, the actual duration of therapy.
How long will people actually stay on these drugs?
And, most importantly, net price realization after all those complex rebates and discounts to payers. How will payer negotiations and government pricing actions like the IRA truly evolve and impact their long-term value, especially as these drugs become more prevalent?
What's the real price they get?
Third, how effectively can they manage the coming patent cliff, especially with Trulicity, a former blockbuster expiring in 2027? How quickly will patients switch to Mounjaro, and can other existing products like Verzenio truly fill that revenue gap to ensure a smooth, financially painless transition, or will there be a dip?
Can they bridge that 2027 gap?
And fourth, what is the risk-adjusted likelihood of successful pipeline execution for those key programs we discussed? We need to focus on the binary outcome of their Alzheimer's drug, donanemab. It either works or it doesn't.
A huge swing factor.
And the ultimate commercial potential of their oral GLP-1, orforglipron, and GGG triagonists, retatrutide, especially as competition in these next-gen spaces heats up.
How likely are those pipeline hits?
Finally, how might evolving healthcare policies globally impact their long-term profitability? The undeniable trend toward greater price controls on pharmaceuticals, driven by governments and health systems seeking to manage rising costs, is a significant long-term risk to their current investment case.
The pricing pressure isn't going away.
This isn't just a minor headwind. It's something that will continue to fundamentally reshape the entire pharmaceutical industry, affecting even the most successful companies.
As we've explored today, Eli Lilly has achieved truly remarkable success by boldly focusing its innovation on areas of immense unmet medical need, particularly the global epidemics of diabetes and obesity. But as it transforms into an increasingly focused, almost singular product-dependent powerhouse, what does its trajectory tell us about the future of pharmaceutical giants?
Mm-hmm. What's the bigger lesson here?
Will this intense specialization and massive capital investment become the new blueprint for industry leadership, creating unparalleled market power? Or does it ultimately create a level of revenue concentration that makes even the most successful companies vulnerable to their own success should the market or science shift unexpectedly?
Is focus the future, or is it too risky?
It's a high-stakes strategy, and the world is watching.
And that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Eli Lilly. What an incredible journey of strategic transformation, immense growth, and future opportunities and challenges we've unpacked today.
Indeed. It's a compelling case study of strategic focus, massive, almost unbelievable investment, and navigating an incredibly dynamic, high-stakes industry. It truly does raise important questions about where the future of pharmaceutical innovation and the companies that drive it is headed.
We hope this deep dive has given you a shortcut to being well-informed about one of the world's most talked-about companies and sparked some new aha moments about how these trends might impact your own life, your health, or the broader healthcare landscape you interact with.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.
We'll see you next time.